bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the big show. Awfully sorry we're a bit late. If you tuned in last night for it, then just about the time we should have started, I was probably somewhere near Oxford. It got a little bit boring last night getting out of London. It wasn't the best. But we're here, it's Friday night, so you're probably down the pub and having a curry. If your curry didn't look this good, you're going to the wrong curry house, mate. That is a naan bread from the Kismet over the road from where I live, and I'm so glad that it's not further away. I've had a few people tweet back saying, do they deliver? But I think it would be cold by the time it got to most of you. So that is a freshly cooked naan. And the only reason that the front one started to sink is because I stuck my finger in it. So otherwise,
that looks fabulous, dude.
That looks beautiful, doesn't it?
Work of art.
Few things are better than anything that comes fresh out the oven, I think.
The whole food, all the food over there. So what we're going to do next year when we have the bash is that we're going to have a curry night over at the Kismet before the main event. So there'll be two nights accommodation to spring for, I'm afraid. But it should be good. Oh. It should be very good.
I think I might be able to suffer that.
Yeah, he's going to put a special thing on for us at the back. We're going to have a marquee up and stuff like that, so it's beautiful.
Give me enough notice. My passport's up to date.
It's going to be the 6th of July next year.
Okay.
So there you go. That's enough notice, I hope. James Hart is joining us. How are you doing, mate?
Good evening. I have joined you, in fact.
To discuss the week in technology. What's been happening, Jim Boy?
This week, I did something that I don't normally do. I went on a pub crawl on a school night, and I'm not doing that again. I had a 10 o'clock meeting the next day that I don't think I can actually remember any of.
Me. Was the questions afterwards?
Probably.
Stern questions will be asked.
Yeah.
What was the occasion of the pub crawl? Was it anything important?
What happens is one of my colleagues he loves his proper beer, and there are so many pubs in central London, and what he does is he goes around. The research that goes into these pub crawls is just mind-boggling. I don't know how he survives them. But so there's six or seven pubs we go to, and a group of the guys from the office, sort of maybe sort of 40, 50 of us, invade these pubs, which is quite frightening for the regulars there. And generally, there's something which is being celebrated. And the celebration was for me, basically, it was a convenient way for me to get a lot of people together because I'm kind of leaving in the next couple of weeks. So I sort of celebrate.
Congratulations,
that.
Mate. Enjoy the new job.
Thank you. Well, it's going to be a bit of a wrench to leave where I am, but we had a good time, and that's what matters.
How long have you been there?
11 years.
Oh, that's quite
a man and boy.
No, really. Not a chance. You're not going to swing that one past me.
There are some people, the people who have been, there are people who've been there since before I was born, but they're starting to retire now. So I think to myself, well, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Well, you're about to say they're starting to decompose now.
I asked a question. my mother's church is struggling financially. And I said, why is that? And she said, because everyone's dying. Christ. Sorry, Mum. I didn't
literally,
mean to ask.
Yeah,
yeah, literally. Actually. Ian, sorry to come on to you on that sobering note, but how are you doing, mate?
I'm great, sir. I'm really good.
Good, mate.
This week, been doing bits and bobs. Got a new phone, got an Android phone, so I'm mucking around with that.
Chuck the Windows crap.
Well, it's retired. Thought time for a change.
Now,
a bit bored of it, to be fair.
Now, the other week, we were having a conversation about Android and how good it looks in comparison to iPhone and all that kind of stuff. And we got an email. And I need to I'm trying to find the email. Here we go. Email. Email. There we go. From James Herbert. James said, just a comment in relation to the recent discussion on advances in relation to Android phones versus iPhones and how they are getting better. I wanted to share my experience with the Galaxy S3. Thank you, James. I have both the 4S and the Galaxy S3. I agree the S3 is a lovely looking device, great screen, processor, etc. To that end, I wanted to replace the 4S as my daily phone, but I soon ran into issues. I've had lots of instances where phones simply become where the phone simply becomes non-responsive for long periods of time. The software keyboard is absolutely hopeless. There's no replacement for apps that I used to use on the iPhone, like Numbers. And the biggest killer is the latest ice cream sandwich update, 4.04. It's totally killed the USB data transfer rate between my Mac and the phone. Samsung has yet to release a compatible version of their management software keys for Mountain Lion as well. I'm not an Android newbie, having owned numerous Android phones before, prior to the iPhone, and I'm not an Apple fanboy, as I used a number of Linux and Windows devices, but simply put, the hardware aside, Android is simply not as polished as iOS for mobile devices, and the key is also Samsung appears to primarily support Windows rather than giving a toss about Mac. Put simply, switching to the iPhone around 2 years ago, I've gotten used to things that just worked. I plug in the phone and the Mac syncs and the iTunes syncs, etc., and it works with my Apple TV, and I look at where my photos are, and it's all synced to iCloud. Android, unfortunately, is just too much hassle. Something I didn't want in a phone anyway. There you go.
I quite like the fiddle, to be fair. It's good fun. I mean, I have to say mine isn't stock by any means. I've got the old Sanager model logged on the phone, and it's so much better. Can getting rid of the one of our devs has got the 3S at work, and he was complaining that he thinks what Samsung do when they titivate the OS and put their bits on it,
yeah,
makes it worse. And if you've got the raw OS as Google intended, it is a much better thing.
Can you hack to put that straight on to any of the devices?
I've done that.
Oh right,
I wrote it in mine when I got it, and I've done that. I've got a thing called Spanager mod, which is like one of the most popular of the ROMs.
Apparently,
and that runs really sweetly. I've currently got ice cream sandwich. I'm going to hold off Jelly Bean until it gets a little bit more polished before I go near.
There was a thing going around this week about the Kindle Fire HD, and people were saying that probably the best thing you can do with it when you get it is root it, just to run a pure version.
I read Andy Nacko's review, and he was saying it's quite nice because it hides most of Android away, so you're left with the Kindly
things that Amazon want to sell.
Amazon Kindly sort of shop type thing. And that was better if you're going to use it for the way it's intended.
There you go.
It becomes something of a walled garden, doesn't it, at that stage, unfortunately?
Yeah.
A little bit. Next to Ian, we have Kelly. How are you doing, Mrs.?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm all right. This is your second appearance today, feet up in front of the TV.
Yes, and, it's been forever. Tech. How are things?
Yeah, it's been a few hours. I've been curried up since then, so.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Mm. There you go.
And last but by no means least, on the main panel, round the outside, is Eric Lanigan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good, man. A week in Petaluma had done you well, or?
Yeah, well, you know, it's iPhone weeks. So there's been a lot of buzz going on.
And have you bought one?
Not yet. I've got to figure out... I've still got to figure out AT&T and Verizon. First, I saw everyone saying Verizon's the best, and that got retweeted everywhere. And now people realize that, oh, wait a minute, you can't do data and phone at the same time on the Verizon one. So now I'm not sure.
You can over Wi-Fi.
Oh, well, yeah, but I think I'd really like to do, though, because I've actually been grandfathered into that AT&T Unlimited plan, but it's meant that I don't have tethering ability, so I really want to be able to tether, like for my MacBook Air. And so then the question is, would I rather have the Verizon 4G in the many more cities it has, or the Verizon HSDPA Plus in the more areas it has compared to Verizon's 3G?
Tough. So I'm clinging to my AT&T Unlimited data plan like it's the last chopper out of Saigon.
But does it really save you anything, though, at this point?
At this point, if we were to start adding data for all the devices, my husband and I each have an iPhone and an iPad, and he has a laptop and I have a laptop, that we would be able to all put on the same plan, but... we each have unlimited data, and I kind of feel like, screw those guys. They gave me unlimited data, so I'm going to hold on to it for as long as I possibly can. I ran the numbers, and we'd only save, I think, $16 a month if we went to the shared data situation. What I did was my iPad is Verizon, and so I can use it to tether if I really want to, and it doesn't have a contract, and there's no nonsense with it. It's a pretty straightforward setup. So it's not 4G, but most of the time I'm not going to notice that difference anyway. So I guess it kind of depends on which way you want to go with it. I mean, I would hold on to that unlimited data as long as you can.
There was my first mistake, allowing the two people who know how to talk the most to strike up a conversation between themselves.
Well, I just got to say, it's not, they cap you now at 3 gigabytes. No, so after you hit 3 gigabytes, it's technically unlimited, but they did that really slimy thing and said, okay, it's unlimited, but we're cutting it down to about dial-up speeds once you hit the 3 gigabyte wall.
Yeah, in Portland it's five.
And I'm Alex G. Fox.
And just before we get to the UK 2 ad, I want to introduce Alex Fox. How you doing, man?
I'm doing
well. Oh, it's God, really blimey, you thought you were in for an easy night there for a minute, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. That does, I mean, listen to this conversation. It's one of those things that make me very glad to be British. And this isn't a xenophobic thing. This is, we don't seem to have these issues. You've got one, two, three, I don't know how many suppliers we've got, but everything's much of a muchness. I mean, I don't even understand what you're discussing. We go into the shop and they say, it's a lot of money and it will stop working at some point. And we go, yeah, that's fine. Thank you. And then we walk out again. It does sound an awful lot more complicated for you.
There are fewer suppliers than there ever have been, with Everything Everywhere being kind of this mesh between Orange and T-Mobile. So.
Right.
So is it going to get worse? T-Mobile.
Get on with your introduction, mate.
Fabulous segue into the first story, which is that Everything Everywhere and the 4G outlay has published a map of or a location of all of the places that are going to get 4G in their trial. Thank God Birmingham's in there. London's in there as well. Southampton, Bristol, Cardiff, Liverpool, Manchester, Nottingham, and a couple of others that are covered up by Nottingham. Hull. Who the hell put Hull on 4G?
Yeah, exactly. We're not getting in. The Hullies are.
Hull hasn't even probably got working 3G.
Well, they've always had Kingston, haven't they?
So and then you got Belfast, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and the one at the top there that's covered over, I think that might be Berwick-on-Tweed, but I don't know. Newcastle, I think it is, actually, to be honest.
That's Newcastle, yeah.
4G is coming to the UK. Everyone's dead excited. Rory Kefflin-Jones said that you could get 34 megabits a second down and sod all up this week on the TV. But speaking to some people who've had 4G in the States for a while and at least discussed it, what have we got in store for us then, guys?
Well, for starters, you have to eliminate all competition in your wireless broadband. Oh, wait a minute, you don't? What?
So
that's
who's
done here?
Who's running 4G in the States at the minute?
You mean companies or people on the panel?
Companies.
I think we only have like 4 million.
Unless, of course, you do own your own telecommunications network, Eric, in which case, what the hell are you doing on this show?
AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile just got some, I think, from either AT&T and Verizon. They bought some 4G LTE frequencies finally. And then Sprint is dead last with the LTE. Well, I mean, above T-Mobile.
Right.
Yeah.
And either of you guys on it?
I, at one point, did have a Sprint 4G overdrive, a little MiFi device. And my husband, for remote, when he has to log in remotely, has a 4G air card. I don't know who his carrier is, but it's reasonably perky. It's not like right now on the Wi-Fi at my house through my cable company, but it's certainly not awful.
Right. So
it feels like it's faster than the 3G on my phone.
Sell us 4G, okay? It's not awful. James, what
I was going to say, do we have a problem, though, with the different... there is such a thing as LTE, which is the long-term evolution of mobile data. There is 4G, which doesn't seem to have a definition. From what I can see, it runs can run at four different frequencies.
Yeah, it's
from 900,
not LTE,
1800.
But it's not the evolution of 3G. There's sort of a 4G designation depending on who it is. So, like, Verizon is calling it 4G, but it's not 3G's evolution. It's really LTE. And that's kind of the issue that a lot of places are having, is that it's not an official designation.
And strangely,
it's easy to make people buy it.
Oh, sorry. And strangely, it's LTE minus voice. I thought this was interesting. I was really excited to see Apple say that the iPhone 5 is going to have that ultra wideband HD voice. I mean, I think that's great because phone quality of voice on the telephone's actually gotten worse in the last 20 years or so since we moved to cell phones. So that hasn't been improved. So I thought, oh, that's awesome. We're going to have CD quality sound over the phone. Well, not in the US because none of those companies are willing to do it. But that's one of the things that Verizon did differently with their 4G implementation. I think originally the way the telecommunications, I think it's the ITU, it's like a body of the United Nations, and they specify what can be called 3G and 4G and everything. Originally, they said 4G meant LTE with voice over LTE. So voice was entirely over the same LTE network. Then they downgraded that and just said, it's just LTE. Then they downgraded that once you had T-Mobile and others saying, well, we have 4G too, even though it's HSDPA plus, and defined basically super fast 3G as also 4G. So in the United States, at least 4G just means faster than 3G.
I'd be taking
LTE
notes.
Is LTE a single frequency?
No.
No.
It's meant... Yeah, you find LTE has a lot of... LTE is actually broken up between a lot of different frequencies. Some companies are reportioning their really old spectrum to use this, and others. So you get like... That's why if you look at the spec page with the new iPhone, you've got like AT&T's covers like these different hopping LTE frequencies, and then Verizon's do these hopping ones. So it's hard to get a contiguous block of LTE.
Yeah.
This is where the question arose.
Yeah.
The problem I have, sorry to interrupt very quickly, is the fact that are we going to end up, in the UK, we're really lucky. You buy a mobile phone and you get it unlocked from your network and you can probably use everything up to 3G plus on any network because they all run in a kind of, on a homogeneous frequency and a set of instructions. Is there the risk that if everything everywhere sticks 4G in, another company could stick a different 4G in, you have to buy a different phone like you did a few years ago?
Kelly, you were making a point. Go ahead.
Well, it's possible. What I was going to say was that I pasted a link into the chat that's a New York Times blog post about why the Verizon and Sprint phones won't do voice and data at once. And one of the interesting things about it is it says basically for right now, it would take two antennas. So the iPhone 5 supports voice and data on GSM-based 3G and LTE. It's not yet possible to do that on CDMA LTE in a single radio. So they could have just added another antenna, which is how the Verizon Samsung phone, the S3, Samsung Galaxy S3 on Verizon is able to do it at the same time, is because they've crammed in another antenna to do it. So the question is asked, why Apple didn't add that other antenna? Since it already has two, why would adding a third be a big deal? Leaving out the third antenna lets them simplify manufacturing of the phone, first, for multiple carriers. And then second, it says in the next 2 years, 4G LTE technology is supposed to evolve to support voice and data at the same time, which means that that extra antenna would then be useless. So it's kind of a nerdy article, but it makes a really good... case for what this is why they did it, and it's really nice to have that explanation broken down. So I would encourage you guys to at least go skim it if you're curious.
Yeah, we'll put that
in the
show notes.
It does explain how it all works, and so it's a very good read.
The key point here is the fact that if we are sitting and have a conversation where actually there's a couple of us sitting going, "Hang on, I didn't know that," and I've been watching the news from the tech viewpoint, what's the consumer going to end up with? I mean, what's my mom going to end up with when she walks in a store and tries to get a phone? And says, I gather there's something that's faster.
On the
proper phone.
I mean, it's got Bend Over and Hump Me written all over it. I mean,
But that's the problem we've got here at the moment. Sorry.
Your mom probably wasn't up at midnight last night for the pre-order either. So
I mean, we've got two main frequencies. We've got the, I don't know what they're called now, T-Mobile Orange frequency, and we've got the Vodafone O2 frequency.
Are they different frequencies then?
iPhone 5.
Yeah.
Sorry? The new iPhone 5 will not support even the 4G. If O2 and Vodafone do by the end of this year, which they're now saying they're going to try and do, get 4G up and running, it's the 4G that the iPhone won't support. So there's going to be a real problem here because of it looks like either Vodafone and O2, who are the biggest two carriers, are going to have to either do something about changing their frequency. Because apparently early next year, there's another auction coming up for some new frequencies on 4G.
Mm.
Could be opened up, which is now pushing the price up dramatically because of Vodafone and O2 have got no choice but to buy that because they will not be able to operate 4G on iPhone 5s. All the other carriers have already got the right frequency. And Apple basically said the same thing. They're not going to bother putting in the frequencies for all the other networks because of the frequency that's going to become available over the whole planet in the next 2 years, and everyone's going to have to buy, is the frequency that they've gone with. So in this country, if you buy an iPhone 5, even in, say, after the end of this year, you still won't be able to use 4G unless you're running it on two companies. The two main companies aren't going to be able to support it because of, they've got to buy it next year at some exorbitant rate, and then they've got to put in the infrastructure. So it's going to be a
That's really,
really
interesting, though, Alex, because what that says is that unlike in a few years ago, where the mobile phone manufacturers had to be able to cater for multiband as was, it's gone the other way around. The mobile phone manufacturers are almost calling the shots and saying, you guys have got to put your infrastructure to suit what we're going to be selling worldwide.
But the frequency that's left by the television switch off and various things is going to be the 4G, which Apple support. Everything Everywhere, whatever it's called, has already got that frequency, but they bought it early. That's why they're able to start it this Christmas.
But the rest
of that frequency isn't available for auction until next year. If Everything Everywhere is clever enough, they'll buy that and they'll push Vodafone and O2 out of the whole marketplace for 4G.
No, they won't be allowed to. They won't be allowed to. Monopolies and mergers stop and Ofcom and stop them. I can't see them letting them dominate the market.
I'm an O2 business customer, so it really is a problem for me to change. And I won't be able to use 4G on an iPhone, which is okay, because I'll just buy another phone. I don't care if that...
Ian, you were going to say something there.
People I was just going to say that three have also bought a chunk of the...
Sorry, Alex. Go ahead, Ian.
I was just going to say that also three have bought a chunk of EE service, apparently, Everything Everywhere service. They've decided they want to be in on it, although they can't launch theirs until September.
Yeah, they've bought. I saw that they were coming back into the market, but the thought of Everything Everywhere controlling sub-licensing of a complete frequency or complete set of frequencies that effectively is 4G to everyone else that's a mobile phone provider. I mean, even Kelly and Eric would be scared of that. Surely, Eric, you had a point.
I do have a point. I'm not a electromagnetic wireless radio engineer, but I have read some interesting articles from someone who is a while back, and they made a very credible case, I thought, for why the entire system we have of wireless infrastructure and auctioning and bidding for wireless spectrum real estate is completely flawed and is completely against the consumer and exists only to build up and maintain monopolies in these phone companies. It has to do with the high efficiency of packet switch digital networks and the fact that LTE uses spectrum even more efficiently than 3G did, which used even more efficiently than 2G did. With every new technology, you get each person's phone using a smaller and smaller portion of that network space. You get interference handled better. You get hopping between different cells better. You get all these great technologies that when you look at the model of, we're going to give you a license to exclusive use for this frequency swath of air, basically, that was set up for a circuit-based network, or think of like TV and radio, you know, totally analog. It's totally on. If you have any interference in that channel, you're corrupting that signal. Whereas with a packet switch network, we're all on the same phone network. We're all hopping on and off. We're all roaming with our phones. Whereas LTE, at least in the States, there is no roaming with that. You literally can't even have roaming. And that's what the phone companies have really always wanted. It was in their best interest to have exclusive ownership to LTE frequencies broken up all over the spectrum so that a Verizon iPhone can't be unlocked or not even unlocked, but just different SIM card. Boom, you're on AT&T, or boom, you're on T-Mobile. They don't want that because it reduces churn that way.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what would be best for everyone is just to say, here's the LTE frequency all over the country. everyone can hop on it. Sharing is mandatory, like it was with voice, and just deal with yourself, deal with, you know, work out the agreements between your companies and figure out how to deal with interference and just handle it like that. Instead, we've got this issue where Verizon and AT&T claim that only they can provide 4G service because they're the only two big companies. So I'm really interested to see how this 4G develops in the UK and whether or not you'll get things like data roaming over 4G LTE or whether you'll follow this really bad path that we have.
See, where were you when an American was interested in the UK news? Yeah, it's right up there with Kennedy being shot.
I think it was 1942, or 1941, I can't remember.
No, they never got there early enough for then. Steady on.
I'm really hopeful that something will happen, and the reason for that, and honestly, I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner as far as cellular technology goes. I'm occasionally on another show out of the UK called the International Mac Podcast. It is not video, but it's always a good time, and what's funny is we will bring up a topic like it's exciting news in the United States that AT&T is selling unlocked iPhones, or that the option of unlocking your iPhone that is on AT&T is something that's now available, and it's news and it's interesting here. And I bring it up on the International Mac Podcast, and they all kind of go, "Oh, Kelly, you adorable Americans and your quaint little cell phone services." And I'm really surprised, given the amount of connectivity there is in the world and the awareness that it's really not hard to get of what the mobile situation is like in other countries, that there's not been a huge amount of pushback on something like this already, like subsidized phones. And if you're subsidizing my phone, why doesn't my contract get cheaper once I've paid for 2 years and I'm no longer, you know, if I'm eligible for an upgrade, why aren't you giving it to me? Why isn't there a discount on my bill? You know, the whole phone subsidy and then the whole bandwidth carrier thing, like, it was a revolutionary thing here when you could port your number from one mobile carrier to another. And that didn't even happen until years started with two. So it's been really interesting to me how we're sort of in the caveman era still of turning a mobile device into a utility. And the fact that, you know, some of the protections and some of the things that you guys take for granted over there aren't the same as what we have.
And what do you see all the politicians and ignorant journalists saying? They say we have the best wireless system in the world because we have the most 4G of any other country. So you see, they played exactly into that marketing gimmick of changing the definition of 4G and pretending that that means that we've got the best in the world somehow.
Mm. Right. And that's
what was an accusation we made of the This was an accusation we made of the U.S. government a number of years ago, that they are sort of almost like a marketing mouthpiece for the mobile operators. So, I mean, maybe that's a dreadful accusation or get me thrown out of America for life, but...
Well, they can deport me for it, too. But here's the thing. It's true. And the reason it's true is because the only source of information they have for it is what the AT&T lobbyist or the Verizon lobbyist, or even, I mean, let's pretend they have them, the Sprint or T-Mobile lobbyists actually tell you.
The one little guy with a briefcase.
Yeah, one poor little nerdlinger standing outside all alone. You know,
wasn't there a technology person appointed to the White House to be able to sort all this stuff out though?
Oh yes. God, he got a right kicking though, didn't he?
Well, and given the amount of legitimate security things that are also kind of an issue in the United States, what mobile carriers are telling senators is probably really low on his list. And that's sad. Yeah. But, I mean, remember, there's still a guy, I hate to bring it up, but remember there's a guy on the Science Committee in the House of Representatives who thinks that if it is a legitimate rape, a woman's body has a way to shut that whole thing down.
Yeah, he's our head of science. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's welcome to America.
I'm not wishing to belittle that at all, but I'd rather move on from it if you don't mind.
There are times I'm not proud of my country, and that's one. So let's talk about something else. Do we want to talk about connectors again?
Let's talk about me going to Sports Direct this afternoon because Sharon decided that she wanted this morning. Sharon decided she wanted to go shopping this morning, so I had no choice. I've been away for 10 days, so I had to do what she says. And we're in Sports Direct, right, and we're looking at the shoes. And I've always wondered what happened after extra large. And apparently, it's fat bastard. See, there you go. The shoe sizes go up. The ones that are the biggest are on the bottom. The ones that are the smallest are on the top. And XL is on the top. And Fat Bastard is underneath. See?
I've made my size now at last.
Finally, I can get something that fits.
FB, perf.
That's technology for you right there. Yeah. Now, BBC is auctioning off 15,000 bits of kit. It's Shut Up White City, and it's shown down Shepherd's Bush, isn't it? The
Bush House.
Bush House, the one that Bush with House. The circular Bush thing House in the middle Strand. Where. Yeah, but isn't the other one going soon?
Telecentre's not going to be closed until March next year.
Right, but it is definitely going at some point. And the BBC...
What they're going to do is there's two parts of the building. There's the round bit, and then there's the studios which hang off it.
Yeah.
And it would appear that the UK cannot do without those studios. So what's going to happen is the building's going to be sold off and the studios basically rented back to whoever's going to be using them. Because not just the BBC, but Channel 4, Channel 5, ITV.
Yeah, I mean the studios have been rented out for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. But and that's going to continue to be the case.
But not the radio ones.
Yeah, but the BBC.
They're going to do it from podcasting, aren't they? They're all going to sit in front of their Macs and they're going to do it from home.
Maybe
that's what's going to happen.
But if you'd like yourself a tasty bit of kit, then you can go and auction it off. You can go and buy it. 1,500 items, not 15,000, are being auctioned by Pika Pattinson Auctions, and you can get some really, really good stuff, including on-air lights that were used in famous TV and radio stuff, and there's a whole pile of stuff here. There's a Philips 42-inch television for £20 at the moment.
It's crazy. The whole thing is completely bonkers. There is some tat from the 1980s and 1990s, which one, you need a van to be able to... You have to come and pick it up yourself. So if, for example, you've got this... They're ripping out these studio kits. So you have a desk with a mic stand and a microphone and a pair of headphones and maybe some smaller mix console. And that'll go for something like, you know, £250, which is a reasonable amount for it, but you've got to take it home. And then there'll be an Electro Voice mic, which is the single mic... That's part of this desk setup, but sold separately, which will go for £230 because somebody really wants that microphone. They don't want to have to take the desk away. So the prices are completely, they're all over the place. And what happens on the day of the auction, because they've already had the first of these, yeah, because it's always nice to be able to sort of pick up a potential bargain for the studio, or whatever, you know, especially if it's got this sort of historical context to it, is. It will go crazy, and it will start off being £20, but on the day of the auction, wham, it's up at £80, £100. And then you think to yourself, actually, you could probably get on eBay for less. Well, so be cautious is what I'd say. There is some really good stuff there, but do be cautious. You might end up paying more than you need to.
Here's Lot 2501, Favag. I sound like an auctioneer, don't I? Favag analog pulse clock with Wharton digital display pulse clock. Please note, the pulse clock generator is not included. It's £10.
Yeah, at the moment.
And that's the clock.
Those Wharton clocks look bomb, though. They look great.
They look gorgeous, don't they? And that's the one where, you know, the pips go off and someone says, it's 10 past the hour, or it's 10 past three, or... And it's those are the ones that have been on radio.
You want that hanging in your office wall, don't you?
You do. I want one.
You want that on your office wall.
James?
£10, I would.
James, last time he was saying you had to take a really big holder in to work with you.
Alex, what's happened to your audio, mate?
Oh, thank God. I thought it was just me.
No, what's happened to your audio, pal?
Cylons have come.
Absolutely.
Two Neumann KMS84 microphones. The pair of them, £65. Neumann.
At the moment. Neumanns. They are going to go crazy.
Oh, hang on.
They're going to...
Two Neumann BCM104 mics, they're currently at £310.
Yep.
Two Neumann KM86i mics, they're at £360. That's not so cheap after all, then.
It starts off, in fact, probably a few hours ago, it was cheap, but people are starting to bid on this stuff now, and it's and when you've got somebody who collects stuff, especially electronic anoraks, the only way you can get it off them is by going into work with a hold on and coming back out past behind the back of the security guard, Alex. And I am not going to be doing that, thank you.
Lot 3091, a Neumann mic, £105. 5 days to go. Place your bids, people. It's an online auction. If you'd like to go and have a play, then you can. But you might walk away with absolutely nothing left in your pocket.
And I can assure listeners that there's absolutely no way any of the stuff from my studio could have come from the BBC, because most of it's Behringer, and they wouldn't touch that with anything.
Behringer, we like Behringer. It's cheap, it's nasty, but it's good.
We like Behringer.
It works.
When it works, it's great, but it's quite an engineering overhead when it doesn't.
No. I've got the three mic thing for £29. It's unbelievable. Broadcasted with them on Wednesday night. Gorgeous. What am I talking about? Toys R Us have released a $150 Android tablet for kids to try and take on the Kindle Fire.
Bad idea.
I found this I found it a very interesting story. I mean, first of all, that looks like the kind of thing that my daughter would be very happy grabbing hold of and playing. I mean, she loves the iPad. She does all the games on the iPad and loves it to bits. It's got Cut the Rope on it. It's got Angry Birds, Temple Run, all the kind of mainstream games that you get off Android. But you can also put on some educational stuff. And we were talking today, me and my wife, about getting something that's educational as a computer game for Bryony to play. This is just the right price point, isn't it? I mean, it's £100, $150.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. I mean, how can you justify that over like an actual Android tablet for that price, or a cheaper, older iPad or something you got lying around, and just put a rubber case around it and give it to the kid?
Okay, bar humbug.
You haven't got children, have you, Eric?
No, I don't.
No, I think it's quite good, this one, because it's, again, nice brightly colours, all the right sort of things for the kids. And the price is right. You don't mind if they drop it and it gets a bit broken.
No, exactly.
Which was the tablet last week we were talking about that would... I think
Kindle
even
Fire.
The Nexus 7 isn't that much more expensive, is it? Or the Kindle Fire itself, yeah.
You remember about an Arcos thing, I remember. I was listening earlier this week. There'd be paddles on it, wasn't it? Again, joysticks.
Yeah, the Arcos is only about £99.
Oh, yeah,
one. Yeah. Alex, you were saying something there.
Yeah, I think there will be a divide with this, because, I mean, to me, I see something that looks like it's designed for kids. Mm. It might bounce when dropped. It doesn't look overly complex, and it doesn't look like something I'm going to be jealous of them having. So, therefore, it's a good thing for them to have. I'd rather have my stuff and their stuff separate. So, you know, when they break it, then it's broken, rather than when they break mine, I have to go and buy a new one. So for me, I think the less complicated... I mean, in a funny way, it's visually stimulating for children, that design, sort of the VTech-type bouncy look. And that, in its own way, will keep them more interested than just a tablet that does the stuff that does. So, I mean, obviously, also, once you get a tablet that's designed for children... It tends to be more rigid in what it does as well. It's not necessarily upgradable and therefore sort of damageable. I've got kids' stuff that I bought for my eldest, who's 14, that my 9-year-old plays for, I haven't got computers from that time, because computers and games and software changes so fast that it's all upgraded and it looks old hat. But when things are written specifically for something which is childlike, lasts forever. And I think in that respect it's a good idea.
So that's the case for the defence. Kelly, you seem to be the case for the prosecution here.
Well, part of my issue is support, because that's what I do as my day job, and so I think part of my issue is familiarity. This is a tablet that if I had kids and if I were to give this to them, I have to learn that system inside and out too, so that if something goes wrong, I'm able to help them with it. And I would rather give them something that I already have some knowledge of, whether that's a refurb iPad in an OtterBox case, or which on one hand...
But it's only Android, mate.
Yeah, it's not complicated.
No. I mean, it's for kids.
then in that case, if it's Android, then okay, I wasn't sure what OS it had on it, but... Even just to get like the Nexus 7 or Fire SD, which is $150 here, the Fire SD, which is what they're calling the current until a week ago Kindle Fire, even that would be something that at least I know, I'm going into it knowing more about it, just because of, I know it's all hooked into Amazon's ecosystem, I can put video on it, that kind of stuff, and I don't know enough about this other one to really say for sure. So my first reaction would be, refurb iPad in an OtterBox case. And the reason I say that is because my niece used to carry around my sister-in-law's iPhone 4. It was her phone. She put it in an OtterBox case, and that phone survived the 4-year-old. So I can't give it any higher recommendation than that.
And you know what? The foam will also survive the four-year-olds becoming a five-year-old and a six-year-old. The tablet will grow with them. They won't throw it away and say, this looks like a toy for babies or something. Or now I need it to do this and that. Or now I'm in school and they want a real computer, a real tablet that runs a real OS and can load real software. I'm not seeing this, guys. I think if you really put the specs, also you've got to look, whenever you have a thing that's like made for kids like this, a piece of tech that's then dumbed down, but the price point kept, they do that by removing all the features. I remember I first noticed this.
A single 1 gigahertz processor on it. It's next to, it's not far off the sort of thing you buy in Maplin, really. So,
no, it's not. But also, it's coming with 50 bundled kids games.
True.
Including Angry Birds, Cut the Rope, yeah. Temple Run. That's all included in that 150. That's $100 worth of games.
And you're up on the $1.99
for Angry Birds.
Yeah, okay. So multiply that by 50, Eric. God, blimey. What did they teach you at school, boy?
Well, wait a second, though. Wait a second.
Oh, hang on.
Have you already bought those games on iOS?
I have, but I'm not. I'm just saying this looks nice if you've got some.
So if you gave an iPad, if you gave your old iPad to your kid and you put the parental controls on and you logged it into your account, but they couldn't buy anything or modify anything, and you put a protective outer box around it, they would have all the games that you already bought for no price. And in exchange, they would get a better computer that they can learn a real platform. You would get a new upgrade.
We're not talking about me, though, are we? We're talking about someone who's out shopping with their family, two parents and two kids, who are walking around Toys R Us and see something that's a little tablet that's Android. They've heard of Android. Their phone's made of Android. It comes bundled with 50 games. It's $150. It's got a thing around it that looks like you can drop it off the kitchen onto the kitchen floor and it's going to be fine. I think that's a win. I think people will pick that up on an impulse purchase by their droves. They won't research it.
That's what I'm saying not to do. That you can't. No. You're supposed to say don't impulse buy.
I think they will.
No, hang on. Just be careful. There is a consumer market out there, which is a bunch of dipshits who buy what the hell they like when they walk around a store and they see it and they go, dolt, and they pick it up.
Unless they listen to tech podcasts who have smart people saying, don't buy this, because it's a bad deal.
Ka-ching, this is, someone's gone, let's get those suckers.
I think they'll do it, but I think they'll be sorry.
I think they'll sell loads of these. Your bumper comes off, so it doesn't look quite so embarrassing when they get older. I think they'll sell loads.
I
agree with you. With all the unbundled games, everything else,
kid-friendly
app store, lots of people that don't understand this techie stuff like we do are going to go, hey, that's brilliant. I've got loads of games in it already.
Come on now. You guys are both backtracking now. We went from saying that you think this is a good product and you buy it for your kids to now. There are some really dipshit people out there who will probably buy this. It is not us.
Market, and it's great for that. It's absolutely fine for that market.
By the way, I just want to point out, if anyone listens here and they've bought a Tabio, I didn't mean to offend you, but you are a dipshit. Let's just be careful here, because if you've got two kids that have got a 16-hour journey from New Mexico to Detroit, this is going to be a fantastic buy for them. Watch a few films on it, play a few games that are bundled in. I didn't look at that bit.
Don't be daft. It's $150.
Yeah, it's LTE. Retina, that's right.
There's a Retina display.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's got a micro SD card slot that takes SSDs as well as.
But you can see what this is, don't you? It's the parents versus the children, isn't it?
It's got AirPlay. You can use it as a controller to play games on the big screen TV.
To be fair, if you've got a MiFi, your quid's in.
Absolutely. All the dads here are all going, that's great. Check it at your kids, you don't worry if it gets broken. You are.
Jake's in the chat room saying, you know what would be better than a tablet for kids, the 16-hour journey? Sleeping pills. Duh. Benadryl. Thank you, Kelly.
Benadryl or bourbon, depends on the length of the trip.
They're trying to make money more secure by putting invisible QR codes in the money. Now, this is only working, of course, with the monopoly money that is the US currency. And at the moment, estimates suggest that 8% of the total quantity of US dollars that are in circulation are counterfeit, which is a hell of an amount. Good, bad, follows, not follows. Do you really want, is money really that bad?
Who uses cash?
Well, everyone wants to get rid of it now, don't they? Cash is untraceable, untrackable, and everything else. And
Uncle Sam,
all our governments want to track what we're doing, so they want trackable stuff. So they're going to put QR codes on money.
If they're going to put QR codes on it, that would be really, really serious, because it means, you know, forget about dye packs and things like that. When you rob a bank, they'll know the thing by the fact that the QR code will scan. Because it's, are they talking about QR codes that are unique, or is the QR code that Federal Reserve website?
Well, each note has got its own serial number anyway. It just makes it quick to read, I guess.
James is suggesting that 8% is a conservative estimate of counterfeit currency in the US circulation.
Well, what are they going to do with it? That's the thing I don't know that wasn't made clear, was what does it matter if there's a QR code on it? Because like you're saying, every bill has a serial number.
And a watermark. I thought they were already pretty secure.
Yeah, and there's the metal strip in the side, too, that helps you determine if they're counterfeit or not. So I don't understand what the QR code measure is supposed to improve. Now, RFID, I could see that. Not that I want them to. Not that I think it's a good idea. But at least I can understand where that thinking comes from. I can actually track this money. So,
well,
I don't get what
the QR code will do. I've been to a lot of pubs this week. And
and some that you don't even recall.
Absolutely. And a lot of, but the point about this is a lot of money changes hands, and it changes hands very quickly. And I think places where you get a massive crush of people all paying at the same time, I imagine quite a lot of counterfeit money probably does pass the counter there. And if there is a quick, I mean, QR code is all about quick recognition. If there is a quick way to run something under something and it goes either beep or buzz or whatever it is to say whether the note is good or bad, I can't see that being a bad thing, apart from the number of fights it might cause.
Well, the point, as I understood it, of these QR codes, it's the same as they want to put on other items as well, is if you've got a serial number on a banknote, for instance, and you've got a QR code, an invisible QR code, I hasten to add, they've got to match. So if you want to try and print your own money, then you might be able to print one with a serial number on it, but you're not going to. But even if you make a QR code, you're not going to know what that QR code is in the Federal Reserve or wherever you keep your money. So once it starts going through the system, it will flag itself up as that's the serial number, that's the QR code, it doesn't match, it's fake. So that's why they're doing it, because it's a foolproof way of being able to check whether something's fake. The moment you print two different serial numbers on it, the or whatever you call the fakers, I can't think what you call them now, the counterfeiters, will be able to say, oh, look, I just print those two numbers. But what this does, it's a fail-safe way of knowing that that's a fake note, because you've got one number, and it must tie up with the invisible QR code, which the only people that know what the QR code should be.
But to be able to the problem we've got is the way to verify it requires some kind of online connection, and that can slow. That could potentially, although the recognition could be slow of the actual code, the matching it up with what it should be, may take time. And I'm not entirely sure how they can balance that out, certainly in a busy retail environment.
What's the criminal value of that database?
That's true.
I think someone may be getting a kickback to include some QR code company has been lobbying, I'll bet. But I can see one little upside here. If they do eventually, you know, sell these devices and it becomes popular that a cashier would scan these and then would check a database online, I guess you could figure out if the same QR code on the same bill was coming up in like states that were at the same time within the same hour in two very far away states, you could say, oh, someone's spoofing that, or that's a counterfeit. But beyond that, I'm sure it's a cost that we don't need.
Well, the interesting thing could be that it could give you, when you scan the QR code under a reader, it could give you three random digits. So it could say, here's the last three digits, here's the first three digits, here's the fourth, the eighth, and the ninth digit, and you look at whether they actually combine and they correspond before you accept the bill.
But also what happens is they go through the banking system, and the moment that thing goes through a bank, it's checked. So a counterfeit note will only last a week, whereas you've probably got counterfeit notes buzzing around your country that have been out there for 20 years. So this way, it's destroyed, you know, almost immediately in the realms of how long money floats around for. So in that respect, it does take it out of the system incredibly quickly.
Good point.
So, you know, basically, as quickly as you're printing them, they're being destroyed by wherever they're checked as they go.
Well, that's just a bigger plug hole, though, mate. You've got to be careful of that because they just print more.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
It's got to be the deterrent for counterfeiting, so there has to be an active process of removal and refusal rather than...
But there was something
just see what Jake has written in the chat room.
Sorry, that's just quickly. There was something I read quite recently that some, I think it was a Korean company or something, have developed a microchip, which is almost as cheap to produce as, you know, printing QR codes. So it literally, it's like a label that sticks on things, but it's somehow, I don't know how it's done, it's nanotechnology, but it's like 0.1 or 0.01 of a pence or something.
And yeah, they should have gone straight to RFID.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Okay, it might be that sort of, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, so they're saying that QR codes is actually old technology now. It's been surpassed.
Jenks in the chat room has come out with a fantastic suggestion. He wants it to go back to being pieces of eight and silver doubloons or going back to bartering. That would be great. And he said, hang on a second, I found a flaw in the system. How many pole dancers are going to scan the QR codes before they accept the bills? So we know where Jenks is going this evening after the show's finished.
Especially around Christmas. Oh no, I skipped a bit.
And finally, there is an electric car, here we go, made by Tata, couldn't be more aptly named, that looks like a robot ladybird. And they're hoping it's going to save the world because it costs you €1 per 200 kilometres to drive. So that's 0.0063 pence per mile in costs.
What's a ladybird? Looks like a ladybug.
A ladybug, yeah, same thing. It's a ladybird in the UK. Here we, this is worlds apart all over again.
You call ladybugs ladybirds?
Ladybirds, aye.
You know they're not of the avian family, right?
Oh, Jesus, dude. Yeah, it's got absolutely nothing to do with it.
A bug is something that the FBI put in your hotel room.
Yeah.
We call them insects.
And if there's a piece of computer software which is just a bit broken, we call it a bird.
You guys are completely confusing me now.
Good.
Yeah, but you're on drugs.
It's not uglier than a smart car, is it? I think this is quite cool. I did read the story quite...
Are you going to be seen and dead in this, mate?
You're joking. You know what? You drive around London. You don't move anyway, so it doesn't really
push
matter
it over.
What you sit on.
It looks like you're driving a Roomba.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The interesting thing about this is the actual fuel, which is the compressed air, has to be 100% dehumidified, which is the problem. They come up with this figure of, you know, you can drive here to the moon for £5.50 in a packet of fags. But the reality is to actually produce the actual compressed air and to have it have such small moisture in it, the actual production of that air is quite expensive. But as a technology, I mean, you know, by the time they probably won't have managed to get the hydrogen working by the time someone's worked out how to get this working. But, you know, you've got these weird, what they call, I don't want to get it wrong because I could come up with something that rude if I get the wrong. There's those little electric cars that people, you see, G-Wizzes or something?
G-Wizzes, yeah, those hateful things you see buzzing around. I've nearly been mowed over by a couple of them walking around London with headphones on.
Yeah, and you can park sideways in a parking space, yeah?
That's right.
They're so small. But this, to look in that, you know, I'd much rather drive away and compressed air than the...
While we've been doing this story...
You could actually have a hand pump, couldn't you? If you break down, you could just pump up the compressed air.
That's not going to look silly at all, is it? No, it's interesting. It's a great example of cookies here, because I'm on the CNET website, and it's got 35,000 other people like CNET on Facebook, and every person that's on there is someone who's one of my friends on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidence? I think not. Zuckerberg, you're a bastard.
No, it's because you're logged into Facebook. I've got two browsers. I use a separate browser to do Facebook stuff on because I don't want Facebook seeing what I'm surfing onto because that's how they use the cookies. They embed their cookies into other people's website. So I only ever use Facebook on Firefox and everything else on Google Chrome. Bastards.
Let's finish on a high point.
I'm paranoid.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. If you would like a website, you can have one up and running by the time I've finished doing this advertisement. All you've got to do is click on our website, britishtechnetwork.com, and click on UK2s and go in and see what they've got available to purchase. You go and purchase that, and if you buy the Site Builder application, literally 1 minute after you get authorised, you can have a website up and running. That easy. Dead quick. You get money off as well. You get 20% off your domain when you purchase it, and you also get no DNS charge if you put in the DNS code, and you get VPS, VPN. There's tons and tons of discounts you can get from UK2. They're absolutely fabulous. Please, please, please support the sponsors of this network by clicking on their links and going and seeing what they've got to offer. We're not here to sell their products. They sell their products. You've got to go there and go, oh, I fancy that and I want to buy it. We're here to sell you the clicks. So please, 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 look on the sponsors page. Pusher.com's on there for the web show. Please go and click that now and have a browse around in their sites and look at the services they've got to offer. If you don't want to buy anything, that's fine. That's okay. But the network is about selling clicks to websites. Please do that if you want to support us, because without those clicks to our sponsors, then we would simply fold. UK2 pick up 24 terabytes of bandwidth a month for us. We had 750,000 downloads in July. Without their support, we just wouldn't happen, plain and simple. So they deserve your support. And you are buying loads of stuff off UK2 as well. Thank you to all of those people that are wonderful, wonderful. Right.
And we won't be mentioning that other network, will we? That the other supplier that went down this week.
Currently having trouble, but everyone that went with the O'Daddy, you should have gone with UK2. See? Not one to gloat. I met the bloke. I didn't meet him, but I've been near the bloke who owns GoDaddy. He's a tosspot. I can't think of anyone else I'd like to. I can't say that word. If he was burning, there we go.
Just sounds like a child trying to get their parents a divorce.
Yeah, that's sore subject, dude. Stop. James, do you have a cool thing for us, sir?
I do. It's not one that I've got in my studio with me. It's not even one that's in this country. It is a really cool thing I saw posted on Twitter this week. It is a pedestrian crossing that you can play Pong with the other person on the other side of the road while you wait for the lights to cross.
You're joking.
I just posted a YouTube video into the chat room.
You play Pong with a person on the opposite side of the street?
Absolutely.
That
check
is
out the
superb.
Video. It is. And Beth saw this and said, what happens if you've got two children? Because they'll be fighting over it. We'll just send one to the other side of the road. Through the traffic.
Have you got to be over the other side of the road? Can you not do it on the other side of the building or the
Well, I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. They're linked, so you're playing with the person at the other side of the road of the crossing, yeah.
Very good.
I thought
you know what
that
I
was
really
just
liked the, about that? The video. I like the way it's got like that egg timery sort of thing to show you how long you've got left to cross.
Isn't that brilliant? Yeah.
Hmm.
I just thought that's a really, really... Where is this you say? Oh, it's Germany, bound to work, isn't it? But that's a really good idea, though.
Well, what have we got? We've got these rather ominous countdown numbers before you get run over. 10, 9, 8, everybody hurry away before the cars are revving their engine. 7, 6. Small child being dragged by his mum. Old woman in a Zimmer frame, running for her life.
Well, they're all now, aren't they? Because the lights are on, not on the other side of the road, but beside you, so you've got to look beside you around across the road to see whether it's red or not.
Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that there is this, the count. Don't you have count? Have you got a count? There's one in Oxford Circus. They've got Boris Johnson designed that Oxford Circus could be crossed diagonally, which is great in principle until you get to the centre where you get two lines of people just bashing into each other. It's quite funny.
I'm stood there and I've watched that. It's the most funny thing in the world, watching people try to cross that street.
Again, as the clock ticks down. Brilliant.
Oh, dear.
There we go.
Cool. Well done, sir. That sounds actually incredible. I can't wait to see someone on the opposite side of the street. Excellent stuff. Mr. Grant, do you have something for us?
I do. I'm 40 now and I'm very unfit, so I've decided it's time to do something about it. And I've started doing Couch to 5K, and I've discovered there's a whole world of apps and things you can get for this. Got a brilliant one on my phone, my Android phone, called Run Double, Couch to 5K Tracker. So it works from a GPS, so it tracks me, so it shows me how far I've staggered and run.
Yeah.
It also, I can play podcasts, I can play my playlists, and it'll interrupt me and tell me you walk now you run, now you walk. And it's a staggered way of building me up from being able to stagger along 20 minutes to eventually be able to run for 30 minutes, sort of be able to do, sort of work towards sort of running 5K. So that's really good. And in conjunction with that, I've picked up another thing called MyFitnessPal, which is a iOS, Android, and a web-based app. You can track your weight, you can track all your other bits and bats to try and work out how you're getting on and whether you're actually achieving anything in terms of calorie burnings and that sort of stuff. So it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be a slightly slimmer fat bastard.
Will you be tracing your progress on the internet using some kind of online tool so we can all see?
Well, if you look at my Twitters, you'll see where I've tweeted my staggerings. Because at the end of the tool, it hooks up to Facebook and whatever else, but it also hooks up to Twitter and things. So I'm posting on my Twitter feed, you'll see C2K run double and my stats for what I've done this my last three runs.
Oh,
it's not particularly good, but I haven't run for 20 years since I left school, basically. So it's a bit of a shock to this poor old man. Do my legs ache, I can tell you that now.
Fart. You old fart, Grant.
I know.
Well done, mate. Good pizza. Now, I'm going to go out of order, if that's okay, because I need Alex's screen to demonstrate what I've got. Alex, do you want to do yours for us now? Have you got one?
Yeah, it's very quick. It's very simple. I'm always breaking these in-ear headphones. I can't wear the other things, you know, the ones, the great big horrible things. So I buy in-ear headphones, and I've got this really terrible habit of buying £20 in-ear headphones and getting on the train, and by the time I've got back, I've already broken them. In fact, nearly every time I go to meet Ewan in a certain pub in Paddington Station, there's a shop in there that I walk in, they go, "You need another pair?" Anyway.
Oh, so dear.
Wow.
The other day, I got an email from ebuyer.com, and I had never read them, but it just had a picture of some in-ear headphones on the front of the email. And I thought, oh, I'm bound to need some of them. How much were they? And I basically bought four pairs of in-ear headphones for £1.98 each. And that included free postage. So they were reduced from, I can't think what they were. Well, at the moment, yeah, they were reduced from basically £8 to £1.98. I've basically bought up everything I could find. I've got boxes of these things now, and I'm never going to run out of in-ear headphones. But I noticed just as I checked it, they've now gone up to £2.99, which is obviously is scary.
But just by appearing on this program.
And the thing is, they're not great, as in they don't look fantastic or whatever, but they are the loudest in-ear headphones I've ever had. And it's
loudest. Quite,
well, the thing is,
but you're slowly going deaf.
Oh, yeah. But I use them on the train, which is the only place I normally wear them, and hence I put them in my pocket and I manage to rip an ear off or whatever happens. And my really expensive ones, I can hear, but not very well. But these are just like almost like having megaphones in your ears. And at the moment, they're only £2.99. And if you click down, it's free postage. And you know what? Not pretty, but if you're like me, you lose them or you break them all the time, I recommend just going to buy them. So ebuyer.com,
cheap.
They're radio pack, black or white. I think they've got loads of colours, actually. Just earphones, and buy them while you can, because I've stocked up. That should last me at least 6 months now.
Excellent. Well done. Kelly, what do you have for us, Mrs? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do a related pick of two things, one hardware, one software, to the couch to 5K stuff. I have a Fitbit. It's $99, and it's pedometer. And here's where it gets cool. It's this little thing that I don't have in my pocket because it's not like I'm walking at the moment. It's small, and it is designed like a clip. And so you can put it in your pocket. You can clip it to your pocket, whatever you want to do. And it tracks all your steps, and it will estimate the number of calories burned based on what it thinks you're doing. It will also count flights of steps. And it will show about how many calories you've burned, about how far you've walked, because it has a preset stride on the steps, which seems to be pretty accurate for most people.
Mm-hmm.
And it will automatically sync. You get a little thing that charges. It's a little USB majigger. And you clip it on there, and it'll charge it. And if you're near that, while it's plugged into a computer with an internet connection, it will sync your data up to the Fitbit site, which then also syncs. You can sync other apps to it, like Lose It will sync to it. I think Runkeeper syncs to it. And there's a few other apps that you can give like permission to access your Fitbit data. And you can add friends on there as well. So if you have other people you know who have a Fitbit, you can add each other and sort of track like who's doing what, where. It will also track your sleep. It comes with a little wristband. So you tuck it in your wristband. And at night, it will track how much you move, which then it uses that to track your sleep patterns, how often you wake up and how long you were asleep and that kind of thing. My software pick is a web service called EarnedIt, EARNDIT.com. And if you have some sort of web logging service, like you have a Fitbit or you have something else that hooks up and reports your stats, you can report your stats, and then EarnedIt gives you points that you can cash in on getting workout clothes or snack bars, like healthy nutrition, energy bars, things like that. And you can rack up points by doing what you're already doing. And then you can get like a $25 gift card at this athletic supply place, or you can get money toward buying peeled snacks, or I don't remember what the energy bar is that they were just telling me about, but you know, things like that. And so you're already doing it. And so now you get like an extra bonus for that. And it's pretty awesome. So there's my picks.
That's EARNDIT.com, is that?
Yes.
Just have a look at that. Sadly, it's US only. Otherwise, I'd be in with that one like a shout.
I'm sorry.
How do they make money?
I don't know. I think it's advertising.
Sponsored, I guess. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
They do is, in conjunction with Alex Fox's headphones, they just shout adverts at you while you run.
Jenkins says he tested out the Nike Fuel Band, and the Nike Fuel Band is cool, but it has a flaw, and I'm trying to remember what it is. I think it's that you have to be moving for a certain amount of time before it starts tracking steps. And sometimes for people that I know who have tried to use it, like it doesn't count everything accurately because it doesn't count every step. So you have to be like walking for 5 seconds.
This is a whole new world for me.
Yeah, it's a super... it's a super interesting bunch of stuff, I think. There's a few other devices that will do similar sorts of things. The thing I like the best about the Fitbit is that it does also track activity, and then I can go in later. Like when I go to kickboxing, I can go back later and report that activity was kickboxing, and then it will adjust the calorie intake accordingly. So it'll show how many calories you burn in a day. And it's all guesstimated anyway, but it's really nice to have an idea of like how much work that actually was, and you know what kind of activity level you have. I wore my Fitbit in Disneyland, and we did 11 miles one day and 12 miles the next.
Wow. Does it what's it registering you as doing at the moment?
Zero. It's not even pocket. It's charging in the office because I pulled it up. Otherwise I would just hold it up and show you. It's small and black, and it's blue plastic on the inside, and it's that sort of grippy rubber on the outside that's like hard but has slightly texturized grip, and it's super handy. It's a really cool little device.
Cool. Seems very good.
Good.
Like that a lot.
Look at that.
Eric, what do you have for us, mate?
I've got a nice simple one here, a little iPhone app. Maybe you already have it. The audible.com app for audiobooks. For years and years, I was using the iPhone and before that, the iPod to play Audible downloads through iTunes, sync them through there, and then play them through Apple's default application. I had no idea what I was missing until the other day when I downloaded the free app from Audible and found out all these customization options that Apple doesn't give you. You can increase the speed in smaller increments. You can do 1.5x. You can do 3x. I would have used that so many times that's run past boring parts in books. You can bookmark. You can set the little jump back button to as low as 5 or 10 seconds instead of Apple's 30. So sometimes you can get back and catch something faster that way. You can also jump forward. All kinds of cool features. Full access to all of your books. Every book you've ever bought can be downloaded instantly right there from the interface. So there's no syncing. You don't sync through iTunes or anything. It's all right in the app. And synchronizes between all your devices, including Android, any platform that has an Audible application. It will sync your current location in that book, including to one of the new Kindles, the e-readers, which will actually sync the same place in the audiobook that you're on in the ebook, which is also really cool. That's the new Whisper Sync thing. So Audible app for mobile devices.
That's really cool. Ooh. Really, really cool.
Yep.
Excellent. Well done, mate. I've got a hell of a pick. You're going to love this. I've been trying to create a flying platform to do a video with, and I've obviously had to learn to fly remote control stuff. So I bought myself a remote control unit that powers the helicopter that I've got and that kind of thing. But the flying helicopters is quite difficult, it seems. I've done okay. I've only smashed one set of rotors. Doing all right. But I was smashing one set of rotors down at a local playground in near Heathrow where I was working. And the guy said, "You want Phoenix?" And I said, "What the hell's Phoenix?" And he said, "Well, see the controller that you got there? You buy a cable from Phoenix and it's USB and it plugs into your computer and you can practice flying your helicopter on your computer." "No," says I. But lo and behold, here it is. You can practice flying your helicopter on your computer. This thing, Phoenix, has got all of the commercially available remote control aircraft that you can buy in the world on its database. All the physics are accurate and correct. And if you run it in parallels on your Mac as well, it just runs slick as snot. And let me just turn the volume up here. There you go. There's my helicopter running away, ready to go. I'll go to a bigger view. I'm not sure. This is at full res, so it might be a bit jerky on the video, but effectively, I'm trying to just show you here. Look, I'm trying to say that I'm flying this, but there we go.
Go on, give it the nuts.
And that's me flying my helicopter badly. Badly delayed. There we go.
Well, that's really cool. I like that idea. You can practice with the virtual one with the real physics before you go crashing your real one.
Absolutely. And
and as an added bonus, that remote control can also power a DeLorean.
Probably. But here you go. Let's change the model.
Does it tell you which bits have broken when you land?
It does actually. There's a little thing that says here's what you crocked up. But let's say I want to go for a pit special. There we go. And I'm going to go and fly me pit special. It's at the end of the runway. And I put it into full throttle. And I can fly my fixed wing. And I'm flying that using the remote control that I've got for any of me aircraft.
That's a great idea. I've never flown remote controlled vehicles like that, but I can appreciate that. That's a really cool idea.
And I gotta say, I think this is the best thing since sliced bread.
I love the idea.
I'm slightly drunk, and I've had a curry. But you can. Yep. There you go.
Now, I think on the stream here we're seeing this at like 2 frames per second. But are you seeing it at like full, like fluid 60 frames a second?
Oh, it's like I'm there flying a real model.
Cool.
And that's in parallels with my MacBook Pro.
Wow.
Wow.
Is that what you spent all weekend getting parallel to work on your computer for?
One off. There we go.
And that was what you were swearing about.
But that's it.
You bent it, son.
It's also dramatically less expensive to crash that plane than to crash the actual plane.
Well, the only thing you've got to watch out for is the fact that you get a bit kind of blasé about crashing it, which is never a good thing. And but the one thing I will say is that I've been flying the helicopter now for 2 weeks, and I'm doing pretty well. I mean, people that have seen me flying it have said, "Damn, that's good." But let's switch this off. I've got to say that flying the real helicopter is easier than flying the one that's on the remote there. So it definitely helps. But there you go. And that's £80. So it's not the end of the world either.
Probably saved you that in crashed aeroplane.
Yeah, still cheaper than crashing a built remote control device.
It would seem
the game
so.
Should have a running tally saying this is how much money you've saved.
Well, I talked to the guy in the shop and he said the one thing you need to do, he said, is go down to the bank and get yourself out a pile of fivers. Just get 100 quid's worth of fivers out. And he said, every time you crash it, put 5 quid in your kid's money box. And he said, and as soon as I started doing that, he said, I got loads more careful about what I did with it. And he said, I started crashing significantly less. So I'm just trying to get Alex back up, sorry.
Oh, it's all right. We all know what I look like. I was going to say, what would be a really nice add-on to that is you could get your computer to operate your remote and fly a helicopter so for you so it don't crash.
Well, the other thing that I've got is a thing called... did you guys see my the hexacopter I've been building?
No, I'm waiting for the grand unveiling.
No, the grand unveiling's not going to happen for a while. I need to get it finished this week. But, I mean, basically, I've got a thing for that called ArduPilot, which it's an interface that runs with an Arduino board that's built on it. And you literally just say, right, I want you to take off, I want you to go to this altitude, I want you to fly along these GPS coordinates, and I want you to come back, and I want you to land. And it does it. That's it. It's super.
Wow.
It's absolutely GoPro incredible. To this thing.
And the GoPro is going to go on the front and the back, and that'll be it.
Brilliant.
It will look awesome. Stunning. Absolutely stunning when I'm finished. And I'll charge a fortune for doing it. So there we go. But that's what I'm learning to fly it with. Phoenix V3 or V4. The beautiful thing about Phoenix is that the £80 is for the cable. If you buy version 1, it'll cost you £80, because the cable's what costs you £80. You can go on torrent sites, whatever you like, and get yourself the software for nothing. But the problem is, you need the cable to fit into the back of your transmitter. And if you haven't got that, it's pointless. And apparently the guy in the model shop says, I get loads of people coming in and saying, have you got a cable for a Phoenix? He said, they don't sell just the cable. But if you buy version 1 of the software on eBay and it costs you £20, you get the cable with it, and as soon as you install it, as soon as you click update, it'll update immediately to version 4, which is the current version, and you get 180-odd models on there that are all commercially available models. Just the best thing since sliced bread. Only works on Windows, yes. But I've got to say, my other pick is Parallels 8. Holy hell. The way that that runs in coherence mode, Alex, you and I were talking about this online on Twitter, it's close to being magic. I can't work out how it does it, but it's a seamless Windows machine that runs in line with everything that you've got. I'm floored by it, absolutely floored by it. And at the moment, Parallels have got one license for £77, two licenses for £78.
Yeah, sounds about right. But you've got to be pretty unlucky to need to pay full price for Parallels, because it turns up in every bundle that you'll ever want to buy. Mm.
Absolutely.
But I love Parallels.
Beautiful. What's everybody seeing Parallels over VMware? I'm a VMware user at work, and so...
I would say that Parallels, for me, the beauty of Parallels was the fact that I could sit and devote the resources around. So, I mean, when that plays, and I pull all of the 1 gigahertz of graphics power that I've got on the MacBook Pro, I pull it all over onto the Parallels machine so that it can run it. And I put 8 gigs of RAM on it. And the thing is, I start Parallels up when I want to use that kind of stuff. I don't leave it running in the background all the time, but I have left it a couple of times just because I forgot about it. And I have to say, it runs seamlessly. I mean, I can't tell any distraction in function on the MacBook Pro from the operations of Mac software, including Final Cut Express. It seems to run just fine.
I mean, it's anecdotal, but you ask about VMware against Parallels. I've got VMware as well. And the two things with Parallels, I've never had a Windows crash when I've done it on Parallels, but I've had millions of Windows crashes when I've run it on Windows machines. I don't know why it doesn't crash, it just doesn't crash. But on VMware, it's the same thing. VMware seems to hog... When you want to use the Mac part of the Mac, it seems to really, really slow down when you're using VMware. But when you use Parallels, it doesn't really seem to care. Oh, it just seems to sort of shut Parallels off somehow, and you can do what you want to do, and then you jump back into it. Coherence mode is just, it's incredible.
It is.
The only reason you know that you're running Windows is it's got a little Windows sign on the icon, and that's it. Mm. It's amazing.
Partly because at work I can bring sort of if I need to bring a VM home to mucker about with. If I've got VMware, I've got Fusion on my laptop, which I have, I can fire that up and pull up a VM from work if there's something I need to work on. Mm. So in that regard, I suppose I've got a use for Fusion, but you're quite right, though. It does flog my poor old MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I struggle with, I've used VirtualBox for years because all I've run is run crap in Windows, just things where I have to access, most of it is to access customer accounting systems that only let you use Internet Explorer to post your invoices and stuff. And I've never really had the need, but VirtualBox tops out at 256K of graphics. It won't let you use more than 4 meg of RAM. And Parallels was the only one that let me devote what I wanted to devote of the 100% of the resources that are on the MacBook Pro, which I thought was pretty cool. And it's a slider, I mean, it's a piece of cake, absolute piece of cake.
It also goes away and gets you operating systems if you want.
Yes, if you say you want Linux on it, it'll go and find you Linux.
Yeah, and Google and Chrome. And all the rest of it. You just say, I think I'll have a VM of that. And it just sets it up for you. You go and make a cup of tea and you come back and you've got whatever it is running on your machine. It's like, you don't have to do anything.
And they're not even a sponsor of the show.
A download then.
Brilliant.
Where can we get a hold of you, James boy?
Well, I won't be flying any drones around, though they are the coolest things.
You haven't seen my drone, have you?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Right, I'll get your picture before we disappear.
Very exciting. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, Syzygy, on Twitter.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much for... I do apologise for last night, but thank you very much for your patience.
All good.
Mr. Sir?
I'm the usual... You can find me at T-I-O-A, B-O-A, turn it off and back on again on Twitter.
Excellent, mate. And how is life in the corporate sector?
Much the same as always, really. Much the same as always. No money, flogging it. No money, trying to do everything we can on buttons of peanuts.
And BlackBerry.
And BlackBerry's wonderful still, yeah. Works for me.
Love it, love it, love it. Kelly, where are you, miss?
You can find me on Twitter. Excuse me. You can find me on Twitter as Verso. And I also write over at TUAW.com and host the podcast there on Sunday evenings, US time.
Okay, excellent, thank you. Mr. Lanigan, where are you, sir?
I'm at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/EricLanigan, ericlanigan.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Mr. Fox.
I am least. Come on, let's be honest. Alex G. Fox on Twitter would be really lovely. Thank you very much.
Excellent, mate. Excellent, excellent, excellent. And I'm just trying desperately to get this to resize before we disappear. But you can find me flying this around the Birmingham area and killing cats with it. There we go. That's my little hexcopter, and it's huge. The span of those things is the width of a doorway. They're 3 foot.
Holy wow.
Wow.
It is a fabulous, fabulous thing. I need to finish it this week, but it's going to have...
Are you building that?
Yeah, I built it. Yeah, I'm going to have 6 12-inch rotors on those things there, and it lifts 4 kilos.
That's what you're... Is that what you're practicing to control on the computer?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's hard.
I imagine if you can get all the rotors working correctly, it'll be fairly easy because it's stable because it's all the way around.
Well,
the helicopter, which has only got a point of access.
If you put in ArgyPilot into Vimeo or YouTube, and then you type in loiter program, there's a guy who's... I think he's South American... And he created the loiter program, and he's got his quadcopter sat, and it's just hovering dead still in the air on this loiter program on a GPS coordinate that he's told it to sit there on. And wow. His mate has got the video camera on it, and he turns around and points it at a windsock, and the windsock is out horizontally. And then he goes back to the thing, and it's just sat there permanently. It doesn't move. And you could the RG Pilot program, you can say, right, always stay level, just go in the direction I tell you. You can tell it to set at an individual altitude and not move from that altitude. You can put throttle control on it. You can also tell it, if you lose signal, come here and land. And you can also tell it to, no matter where you fly it, I want you to stay pointed at this GPS location, so it always points the camera where you're going, where you wanted to point it, and it flies in circles around it. So it's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Sweet. Fancy Moses.
So when I get that flying, I'll post a video.
You could use it to go and pick up your Chinese takeaway, couldn't you? You could set it to go and get it. 4 kilograms.
4 kilos. That would feed two, sure.
Yeah, and you could just get it to come back with it.
You'd have to have rice. You couldn't.
Yeah,
couldn't have anything any stodgy about
spare ribs because they're heavy in the box.
Well, you don't get spare ribs in an Indian; you can only get them in Chinese, so that'd be perfect. Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Well, you can just have.
I'm afraid
belch, and you can send it again.
You'll have to write a nice email to the CAA to get out to fly, though. I think because it looks a bit heavy.
No. It's the whole thing weighs less than half a kilo.
Good.
It's all carbon fibre, mate.
Wow.
But the it's got 20 volt. Motors on it and
a long extension
and 12 inch I've got a 10 inch balance blade. Yes. There those are the 10 inch
weight.
Yeah.
Please attach 4 kilos of tandoori chicken.
How many does that take? 12 of those.
We'll be back again next week as normal with the big show. We'll be back on Thursday night, fortunately. I'll be here as well. I've got 10 days sleeping in my own bed, which I am so looking forward to. My wife, not so much.
That's good.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.